Solitaire Rose Novelcast, Do the Job, Part 3. Solitaire Rose Novelcast is me, Corey Strode, taking the novels that I've written and turning them into audio podcasts, and eventually, hopefully, if I can ever figure out how, into ebooks that are available on Amazon. We're currently on part 3 of the wrestling mystery. Yes, that's right, a mystery set in the world of professional wrestling in the 80s. Do the Job. What you need to know. Lance, who has been out of the wrestling business for 5 years and working as a private investigator, has been hired to investigate the overdose of another professional wrestler who he used to know. As he starts to dig in, the stories just don't seem to match up, and the more he investigates, the more he's going to find that maybe, just maybe, the business is darker than he thought it was. We now start with part 3. I wanted to put it off, but I knew that I needed to talk to Mikey's widow as soon as possible. I hadn't talked to her for years. Hell, I hadn't talked to anyone in the business for more than a few minutes in at least 3 years. I didn't want to be one of those guys who hung out in the locker room after his time, and Katie was adamant that she didn't want me anywhere near the ring. If you don't hang out in the locker room or have anything to do with the ring, you end up not having a lot in common with wrestlers. Their lives revolved around the ring, the same way that a stockbroker's life revolves around Wall Street. Nancy was a quiet woman, and even when I was hanging out with Mikey and the workers at the time, I didn't know her well. She tended to come to the shows and sit in the back with her knitting. Then when we went to bars, she ended up being at the end of the bar chatting with the waitresses instead of any of us. Not that I blame her. We were a hard-drinking crew, and there were more nights we got thrown out by the time closing time came around than nights we left on our own. There weren't many women who could hang with us, nor would they have wanted to. Now it was years later. I was walking up to a quiet suburban home that Mikey said her sister owned. I felt nervous, a bit sick to my stomach, and wished I had some assistant I could fob this off on. I've had these talks with people over the years, coming in after the police have done their work, asking many of the same questions, going over the same ground, rubbing the nearly healed wounds raw with the sandpaper, fresh questions. I'd seen the haunted looks in their eyes, heard the catch in the voice, and seen the terror in the hand as they reached for a cup of coffee, as I pressed them to remember exactly what the deceased had been up to in the hours and days before they died, ran off, or went missing. I would have my yellow legal pad, start putting together my timeline of what happened, trying my best to remain professional. Professional. A nice word to say that I showed no emotion, didn't feel anything as they'd go over their pain and lay it bare for me to pick through and try to find something they missed. The day was sunny and warm. I felt as if I were overdressed, wearing my suit with a black blazer, tie, and the rest. When I knocked on the door, I heard, "Coming!" from inside. When the door opened, at first I thought it was Mikey's widow, but she was a little taller, a bit older, and a bit heavier. Nancy had been a very small woman and amazingly polite. She'd been a full foot shorter than Mikey, but this wasn't her. I moved with my assumption that it was her sister, but I didn't have her name. Billy simply called her Mikey's widow's sister, and calling her that wouldn't endear me to anyone. "I'm Lance. Billy. He said he would let you know that I would be coming by to talk to Nancy." She nodded and opened the door wider for me to come in. It was a nice little house, with tasteful furniture, nondescript art on the walls, and a lot of country-themed items around. She led me to the living room where Nancy was sitting on a tasteful dark couch with a short wooden coffee table in front of it. There were a few magazines that looked to have articles on potpourri and teas, a couple of big cups filled with coffee and 2 boxes of tissues. Nancy's eyes were red and puffy, the after effect of a crying jag of some kind. Not that I blame her. I sat down on the chair next to the couch and saw that Nancy's sister brought me a cup of coffee without me even asking. I nodded, thanking her silently, and before I could start, Nancy said, "You look different when you're all dressed up." "Yeah," I said. "Katie says I clean up pretty good. She even sends me out to talk to other people in suits from time to time, and I don't embarrass myself anymore." She smiled at that. "I thought Katie was a good match for you. She was a lot smarter than you were. It was funny when she staked her claim to you and you didn't even notice it. Glad you two are still together. It's important to have someone." She trailed off and I pulled out my notepad and said, "Nancy, I am sorry for your loss. I always saw him as one of the best of us. Since you asked me to figure out what happened to him, I want to put together a timeline of what happened to him from when he got the job offer from Brad till when he passed away. If I can do that, I can piece together what we know and what's missing. And when I know what's missing, I can start digging into that. I know it's going to be hard, and we can take as much time as you need to. I also know that you won't remember it all right now. We're going to take as much time as we need. Then when we're done here, I'll get out of your way. I know you'll remember things later, and we'll have to fit them in. So there's no problem if you call me and let me know new things later. This is for you. So we'll do it in whatever way works best for you." She relaxed a bit and said, "I thought you were going to come over here and start questioning me like I'm a suspect." "Why would I do that?" I said. "Because it's all my fault. I was so excited about him working for that big company that I didn't even think I was making everyone here hate him." "No one hated him," I said. "He was someone we all loved. That's why we helped him kick the junk." "You don't understand," she said. "You haven't been around, so you wouldn't know. When he said he was going to work for Brad, all his friends here got mad at him. Eddie and Dan both said he was dead to them. Dead! They said he might as well be dead. He didn't want anything to do with him ever again. It broke his heart. He loved the workers. He loved the business. And when he finally gets to where he can make big money, they said they hated him and he was dead to them." She started crying again, and when her sister came over to comfort her, she waved her away. She composed herself and said, "The police say he overdosed." And then they were done with it. They didn't search the apartment. They didn't ask anyone any questions. They just said he was a junkie. And he wasn't. He didn't do that. I talked to him 3 hours before he died, and he was fine. Oh, he was upset about everyone here being pissed at him, but he said they would get over it. He was sure they would. They were just so mad because they hated Brad. He told me that everything would be fine, and he couldn't wait to see me. It's not what he was like when he was using. When he was using, he was either talking about how much pain he was in, or he was high. He never used the drugs because he was depressed. He used them because he'd taken too many bumps. He was teaching, so he didn't even need the stuff. He was all better, Lance. It just doesn't make any sense. I know, I said. That's why I'm here. I don't know what happened, but I won't stop digging until I do. We'll get the answers, Nancy. Are you sure? Damn sure, I said. I was resolute. Maybe an hour ago, I'd wondered if he'd fallen off the wagon. Lord knows a lot of people do. That's why they had drunk tanks and rehab centers and endless AA meetings. I knew that wasn't the case here. I can't tell you how I knew, because I didn't have a shred of evidence. The cops hadn't given me their reports, but the detective in charge of the case told me how they worked it, how they closed the case, as one they didn't need to bother with within hours of finding the body. I knew why. They had to show closed cases. This one had no evidence of any kind to show it was any more than an accidental overdose. I went through what she knew about everything Mikey had done in the timeline. There were very few gaps. She told me about how he'd gone to Eddie about the job and gotten into an argument. He wouldn't say how bad it was at first, but then a couple of days later, when he talked with Dan to try to set up a talent exchange with Brad's company, he let it all out, how angry they all were with him. Nancy didn't have a lot of details, but I guessed it wasn't because Mikey didn't tell her, but instead because she didn't understand the business. There were a few gaps for me to work on, an evening here, a morning there, and most of the last day he'd been alive. She said that he hadn't talked about what he'd been up to that day, but I was kind of surprised at how much of his time was accounted for. He told her everything, and unlike a lot of people, she paid attention. I'd been guilty of it in my own relationship, asking Katie what she'd been up to, and then drifting off into my own thoughts when she went into detail about it. Not a good idea when the woman who's talking to you knows how to cuff you upside the head in such a way it doesn't leave a mark. When she was done, there were very few gaps in the timeline. If I were more of a sentimentalist, I'd talk about how amazing it was that her and Mikey were so close that she knew everything he'd been up to in such detail. But to be honest, I'd known them most of my adult life, and I knew how much they depended on each other. When Mikey was using, it probably wasn't the best of relationships. She made sure he got to where he needed to be, did her best to cover up what she could, and kept giving excuses for him. Even back then, we thought it wasn't good, but she stood by her man. I wished I would have talked to her before I went out to Eddie's house, since her perspective on what happened between him and Mikey was vastly different. Having been in the world of wrestling, the world of investigation, I knew that in both of them, truth is subjective. Eddie might believe what he said, Nancy might believe what she said, and the truth might be somewhere in between. We took a little more than 2 hours, and at the end of it, I only had a few gaps in the timeline. I also had notes on some people I needed to talk to. Who might be able to fill in those gaps, or were people who would have known more about Mikey's state of mind? On my notepad, I had, talk to Eddie, done. Talk to Dan, talk to Brad, debrief Billy after talking to Eddie, Dan, and Nancy, get police reports, apartment search, car search, reconstruct the final day. Nancy saw the notes I had written on the things I needed to do and said, I haven't gone back to the apartment yet. The police went through it and didn't find anything, but I know they didn't look very hard. I know I need to pack it up, and the landlord said I could have until the end of next month, but I just haven't been able to go back there yet. And Mikey's car is in the storage garage there. I haven't been able to make myself go over there either. It would mean that it's all over and he's really gone. I nodded and watched as her sister patted her hand. Nancy looked even smaller than when I had first come in, and I wish I could just tell her that I could make everything fine. That when I was done, I'd make it all go away and my answers would fix everything. I wish I could answer every question, making it seem as if everything was fine. But it wasn't. I went over the facts again, checking them with her, and making sure that we were both clear on where Mikey had been. It was actually pretty easy to follow. Once he got the job from Brad, he spent a lot of time packing for the move. He also spent a lot of time watching the tapes that Brad had given him. Recordings of their shows, so he got a feel of the kind of product Brad was putting out, as well as tapes of wrestlers who were trying out. She said between those things and going to the gym, there just wasn't a lot of free time. The gym trips would be easy to validate, but I almost didn't think I needed to check them out. Mikey was a lot like me in that he felt that if he didn't go to the gym at least 5 times a week, he was letting himself down. The trips to see people would be easy to validate as well. The biggest gap in my timeline was, of course, on the last day. She knew he'd gotten up, gone to the gym early, and told her he was probably going out that night with a few of his old wrestling buddies, the ones who would still talk to him anyway. She didn't know who they were, the time, or the diner, but I knew Mikey, and knew he would be headed for the convention grill in Edina if he had any say in the matter. When we were all done, I said, if it's not too much trouble, could I get the key to the apartment in the car? Why the car, she asked, looking exhausted after our session. I want to check the miles against what we have here and see if there are any gaps. You're going to go into that much detail? Is the money I've got going to be enough? Don't worry about the money, I said quietly, reassuring her. Billy worked out a deal with me, and I stick to it. But this will take so much time, she said. Her look was enough to make me want to just say, forget it, you don't need to pay me for any of this. But that's not how it worked. If I gave in to that look every time I saw it, I'd never charge anyone for anything. I was silently glad I hadn't been like the guy who trained me in the business, who had become so jaded and hard it didn't matter what anyone said or did. It was all about the billable hours. He made lawyers seem kind and loving. We're not going to talk about money anymore, I said, more to protect myself than her. I have a deal worked out with Billy, and my word is bond. You don't have to worry about the money. Now, like I told Billy, I'm going to have to take longer than normal on this one, because I do have to get other cases, and a lot of them have very tight, hard, and fast deadlines. But I'm not working on them. I'm going to be working on this. And if I do get a case that takes me away from this one, would you rather I let Billy know or talk to you directly? Billy, she said. He's handling a lot of things for me. He's been a great friend through all of this. Billy's a saint, I said. And when you get copies of those keys, just get them to him and he'll bring them over to me, all right? Don't you want my copies now? No, I said. I'll need them for a while, and I want you to keep your copies. I thanked her for her time and left. As I was walking to the car, her sister called to me from the door. Do you really think that you'll find out more than the police? I'll look into it more than the police did. I don't know if there is more there or not, but I'll take some time and show some respect. Okay, then, she said, and shut the door. As I drove back to my office, I couldn't help thinking about what I would do if I were in her shoes, or what Katie would do if she were in her shoes. Would I be able to hold it together as well as she did, as I asked about every detail of the last days of her husband's life? The keys were brought to the office the next day by Billy, who looked over the timeline I'd created and agreed with it. He gave me a few more details that helped me fill in a few of the gaps, mostly little details about where they'd gone to eat and the like. It became clear to me that Billy was helping Mikey with a lot of the packing, and as Mikey's local friends had turned their backs on him, Billy was filling the void. Of course, since Billy was only putting on a show a month and drew less than 100 people to them, it wasn't like anything Brad would do would threaten his business. I drove over to Mikey's apartment and did a search. It took a couple of hours only to come up empty. Everything but a few changes of clothes were packed in boxes, and it was clear that Mikey had cleaned the place. Nothing under the bed or couch, shelves empty, even the dishes and canned goods were packed and ready to go. I looked through the couch and chair under the cushions and found nothing of interest. Mikey must have vacuumed them as well, because they were clean enough to eat off of. Refrigerator had milk that had gone bad and a freezer full of chicken breasts, enough vegetables to make a month's worth of salads, and fruit showing he was still on the diet that he'd always been on. As I searched, I mused about how our lives can be summed up by what we leave behind. I was tempted to open the boxes and dig through them to see if I could find anything, but it was clear he'd simply been getting everything they had ready to be moved. In the boxes, other than the things that all of us had, were boxes of wrestling tapes. He had the boxes carefully labeled, names of federations that were gone and some that were still active. He had boxes labeled Japan and Mexico, also full of tapes he'd gotten, and knowing Mikey, watched within minutes of getting them, looking for new moves, new ideas, and other things he could teach a new kid or talk a promoter into trying. That drive to stay on top of what was new in the business was probably the main reason he'd been hired by Brad. Most of the guys in the business start out wanting to learn everything they can, but once they hit their level, they stagnate. How many times had I seen a top guy rely on the same type of match to the point where I knew what his next move would be simply because that's what he always did? I was even like that for a while. When I was a top babyface for Dan, I'd have a 10-minute match, a 20-minute match, and a 30-minute match. I'd have a set bunch of combinations that I would do in sequence, move followed by move followed by move, only changing it up if the guy I was working with had found something he wanted to throw into the match. Mikey had pulled me aside when I got to that point and gave me some pointers on how to mix things up, add some new stuff, and make my matches seem fresh. At first, it irritated me. I was over with the crowd and I was giving them what they wanted. No one told the Rolling Stones they needed to change their act, so why should I? However, he wore me down. I tried a few of the new things he suggested, and the crowd popped even bigger. That's when Dan decided he was going to put the title on me and have me turn heel. Why did Mikey tell me about it? Because he wanted to see me do better. He always wanted to see the workers do better. I sat on his couch, the last place he'd been alive, and thought about that. Even back when he was using, he'd watch tapes and tell guys how to do better in the ring. I knew when I was drinking hard, I didn't have time to do much more than shave and drink, but Mikey was still out looking out for the workers when he was deep in his addiction. Now he was gone. I don't know how long I sat there, actually, thinking about Mikey, thinking about my time in that ring, about the crowds cheering and screaming because of something I'd done, something Mikey had told me to try. Mikey had always been a preliminary guy who worked the undercard, but he was also the guy that Dan wanted guys in the ring to work with if they were about to strap a rocket to him. Mikey made everybody look good. But the cost? So much pain from hitting the mat over and over that only heroin made it go away after a while. Never getting the big payday. Living in this small one-bedroom apartment month after month after being in front of thousands of people. Now this, having me go through his stuff to try and find a reason why he would go back to the heroin he'd worked so hard to kick. I finished up and locked the door on my way out. I went out to the storage garage behind the apartment building, found where his car was. It was a Ford LTD, dark red, and looked like it'd seen better days. Knowing Mikey, the engine was in tip-top condition, but he hadn't washed it since the week he bought it. The garage was big enough to fit the car and not much else, but thankfully I didn't have to squeeze to get in. I turned on the light in the garage and started going through the car. At the time, I didn't think much of the fact that the car was unlocked, figuring that Mikey had thought he'd locked the garage, and that had been enough. Front seat was clean, and under the seat were your typical Minnesotan items. An ice scraper, lock de-icer, and something that promised to keep your windshield from fogging up if you sprayed it on as it got cold. The passenger side had a couple of maps under the seat. When I opened the glove compartment, my heart sank into my boots. It was the owner's manual, paperwork from the times he'd taken it to get it worked on, and a small bag of white powder. I didn't need to test it. I'd seen heroin before. It was also what I was hoping not to find. It was a small amount, but more than enough for someone to keep a habit going for a week or two. I moved it from the glove compartment to my pocket and checked the back seat. Clean. Mikey was always the opposite of me and most other wrestlers, and didn't keep a lot of crap in his back seat. I still kept files, mail, and other things in the back seat of my car as I needed them. At least that's what I told Katie when she asked why I hadn't cleaned out the car. I was in a bit of a daze when I got out of the car, wishing I hadn't found his stash. It didn't seem right to me, since he'd always kept his stash on him when he was using. He, like all of us in the business, were paranoid about having our secrets found out. When he came clean about everything, one of the things he said is he was always worried someone would find his drugs and either take them or turn them in, so he kept them with him at all times. I opened the trunk and saw that there were more Minnesotan items. Jumper cables, a paper bag with hand warmers, candles and matches, and an old coffee can and a big blanket. It was clear he'd kept all this stuff in his car, since the candles had melted into a glob of wax and string at the bottom of the coffee can. His gym bag was also in the trunk, and when I grabbed it, I saw it was open. By reflex, I looked around the area, seeing if anybody was nearby. It seemed strange, knowing that how paranoid Mikey was, that he would leave his gym bag unzipped. He would usually go to the gym about 3 miles away in another of those big strip malls. He was a lot like me, and he would rather have the gym bag ready to go, or it wouldn't be in the car. If he did go to the gym, the bag would come into the house, and then everything in it could be washed, since he worked out long and hard enough that the smell of a gym bag left in a car afterward would knock you out. I picked up the bag and searched it carefully. Nothing was in it that shouldn't be, but I kept wondering why he'd leave it unzipped. I checked the trunk under where the gym bag was, found a cuff link, which seemed out of place. I put the gym bag down and picked up the cuff link. It was a simple design, black stripes on the polished metal background. It was the only one there, and I moved everything in the trunk, looking for another cuff link or anything else like it, but I found nothing. I put it in the pocket with the mini baggie of heroin, put the gym bag back in the car. The cuff link didn't make any sense, since I knew Mikey wouldn't own a shirt with French cuffs any more than I would own a zebra to wander around in my backyard. He dressed in workout clothes most of the time, and for him, getting dressed up was wearing a polo shirt with black jeans. I wondered if he'd have to buy more upscale clothes in order to be on the road with Brad. I'd heard that since he came from TV instead of wrestling, he did things differently, but would he require his road agents to dress up? And if he did, would Mikey have gone so far as to buy shirts with French cuffs? Maybe he bought one by mistake, thinking all dress shirts down at the Daytons were the same, just grabbing a handful that fit and having to buy the cufflinks later. I pulled it out and looked at it again. It was in fine shape, but it wasn't new. The back of the main section was scuffed up, as if it had been worn repeatedly for years. None of it made sense to me. I checked around the car, looking for anything I'd missed, and found nothing. I drove back to the office, listening to the local AM news station go through their reports and weather on the way back. There was nothing about Mikey, which didn't surprise me, since he'd been gone for almost 2 weeks. But it still bugged me how quickly he'd been dismissed. Back at the office, the girls were working on more of their background checks. One of them had started to get up when I came in, but once they saw it was me, she sat back down and went back to her phone call. I waved and noticed that Katie wasn't in, which disappointed me a little. She'd been wearing the low-cut blouse that morning, and I needed a visual pick-me-up after going through Mikey's stuff. When I got back to my office, I started writing my notes on what I'd found, my thoughts from the search, and what I thought the two items meant. Routine search of apartment showed that packing was nearly complete. No one has gone through apartment since police, no evidence of a break-in. Carr had a small package of heroin in the glove compartment. Mikey's? Can't believe he would leave it there. Also found cufflink in the trunk with an unzipped gym bag. Did someone go through his bag and lose it? Did he have to buy it for a new job? Drugs and cufflink have been locked in the safe. I dropped them in a manila envelope that I wrote the case number on and put it in the safe that was hidden in the floor. Inside were a few other envelopes, none of which were from active cases, since Mikey's case was the only active one I had currently. Most of the envelopes were photos and negatives, kept in case one of the cases I'd worked in the past came back to haunt me. I wasn't a blackmailer, but I also wasn't stupid, and knew enough that I'd pissed off people in power and with authority. I wanted something to keep them off my back. I called it my insurance safe, and I didn't even let Katie know about it, since she would just worry that I was paranoid, or worse, that someone might actually be out to get us. One of my early cases, I dug up evidence on a crooked lawyer and stupidly gave all the evidence to the police. Came back to bite me in the ass and taught me a valuable lesson in secrecy. I thought that once I left the wrestling business, I wouldn't have to keep the business I was in a secret anymore. I'd learned I was wrong, and I was a quick student. I closed the safe, put away my notes, and started work on the presentation for the business Katie had set up, but I couldn't get the feeling I'd had in Mikey's apartment out of my head. I was also glad that I couldn't, since I thought that it would be wrong if I dismissed Mikey's life as quickly as it seemed the world had. And there you go, part 3 of Do the Job. Yes, I'm late. No, I have no excuse other than I'm working way too much. Yes, part 4 is already recorded, and it will be up in 2 weeks. Matter of fact, I want to guarantee that it'll be up every other Friday, but I can't do that because if my work explodes on me again, I can't promise it. But I do know that episode 4 is already recorded, already mixed, already ready to go. So in 2 weeks, you'll get part 4 of Do the Job. As with all of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, this podcast has ads, and here they are. Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com. Use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC. Get you some blades. They're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. And if you are interested in the world of professional wrestling, if you go to crazycomics.solitairerose.com, this week, Solitaire Rose Radio, episode 65, has an interview with professional wrestler Danny Warren, who's a current independent wrestler who runs his own federation and is putting together a professional wrestling convention. Those of you who are into comic conventions may not have ever been to a wrestling convention, so it's interesting to know what's going on with them. I want to thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, tell every single human being you've ever met before in your whole entire life. Share the link on social media. Tell your friends about it. Retweet me on Twitter. And let me know what you think. Let me know how you think the story's going. And I'll be back in 2 weeks, I promise, with part 4.